This is TK331, a Star Wars EU/Legends podcast. I'm Crystal, a Star Wars enthusiast, but I've never read a thing I liked that I couldn't complain about a little bit.
And I'm Thomas, a Star Wars completionist who has previously read the entirety of the EU. So, what are we discussing today?
Today we're talking about Shadow Academy, the second book in the Young Jedi Knights series, written by Kevin J. Anderson and Rebecca Moista, and published by Berkeley Boulevard in September 1995.
Shadow Academy was the second book written together by Anderson and Moista, and it came out 3 months after Heirs of the Force did. Other Star Wars books that came out around this time include Assault at Solonia, Tales from the Mos Eisley Cantina, Showdown at Centerpoint, and Darksaber.
It is always crazy to me, the release timeline for these young adult middle grade books.
3 months is a very tight turnaround, but given how much...
I'm sure they were all written before the first one came out, or like many of them were done.
And like given how like this is just looking at Anderson's body of work, this is a much simpler book than say the Jedi Academy trilogy or Darksaber. So I feel like it's a little easier to for that faster turnaround. But he also was working at Darksaber around this time too, because that came out soon after this.
And Darksaber is a brick.
Yes.
It's not good.
It's entertaining.
But it is dense. Shadow Academy continues the adventures of Jacen, Jaina, Tennel Kah, and Lobaka. A rival school to Luke's Jedi Academy has been formed, headed by one of his former students. There's just one problem. Luke and the New Republic have no idea they even exist until they kidnap three of Luke's students, because why not?
Dun dun.
Which three, you ask? Then you should ask yourself, which children have been kidnapped approximately 6 times already?
Two of them you could probably guess. The third one, well, we'll see. While not an instant classic, you enjoyed the first book in the series. How were you feeling heading into the second?
Oh, fine. I was hoping that it would be a little bit more action-y and fast-moving.
And I'd say it was.
Yeah. At first, it didn't feel like it was going that direction. I was like, oh my god, what? Like, how long are we going to spend touring this stupid gem mining facility?
And then boom!
But yeah, then it kind of picked up and it didn't stop. So yeah, fine. I knew it was going to be a fast read. Mildly entertaining.
Okay.
How about you? I'm sure you've read this a few times.
Many times, yes. And yes, I was looking forward to reading it again. I think Heirs of the Force is a solid but unspectacular start to this series. I think this is a much better book. We've gotten the introductions out of the way for the main characters. We can just kind of jump right into it. And I like it better than the first book. I also think the Shadow Academy itself might be the strongest antagonist for this entire series.
Mm.
I really like them. I think it's a really interesting look at just what they have to deal with.
I think the idea is interesting. I'm not totally sold on the execution.
That's fair. I do think, so the next book in the series is The Lost Ones. I don't think it's as good a book as this one is, but I think it's a better look at the Shadow Academy itself.
Okay. Well, we'll see. I'm notoriously hard to impress.
You are. All right, so let us return to this three bubble cover. Let's talk about the big image.
The big bubble?
The big bubble.
So we've got the Shadow Academy in the background.
Yep.
It's very spiky.
Yes, just like her shoulders.
It's a torus, the book delighted in describing it shape-wise. And it just has a lot of... I mean, it kind of looks like Cloud City to me.
Yeah, a little bit.
Just dark Cloud City, you know. And then there's the spiky lady with her enormous 80s hair.
And we now have an identity.
And apparently you were trying really hard to lead me to, like, at least what faction this person came from, but I was never going to guess that. I'm sorry.
I was kind of thinking, like, you know, there's not that many factions of women in Star Wars.
The problem is that I am so Clone Wars pilled at this point that I don't think of Night Sisters as looking like this.
I know.
So I was never going to get there.
So I think, I could be wrong about this, but technically, canonically in the EU, the first appearance of a Night Sister is in the old Ewok movies.
Mm.
There is a witch in, I think it's the second movie, and she was not called a Night Sister at the time. That was retconned later to say she is a Night Sister, and it's been so long since I've seen these, but I feel like her attire is not this exact attire, but closer to this than what we see in Clone Wars.
Okay.
Kind of like just the very dark colors, and like, I think she just wears very, like, dark robes.
Well, this is clearly like a leathery kind of armor.
She's a rogue.
Which is similar to what, like, Tenel Ka wears. But again, I was never going to get it, especially in combination with the two stormtroopers in the background. Like, could I have reasonably extrapolated that this faction would eventually ally with the Empire after all of the mix-ups on Dathomir and courtship of Princess Leia? Sure. But honestly, I try really hard not to remember that book.
The other reason why I thought you might get there is because Tenel Ka is a starring character in this book, and she's from Dathomir, and that might make you think about it.
Yeah. No. Head empty. No thoughts. And then Jason and Jaina are kind of in the foreground looking tentatively into the middle distance. Jason and Jaina with their brandy brown eyes. It's weird. Like, it's just weird to me in a young adult book to describe them as the color of alcohol.
A little bit.
And brandy is also not, like, it's a very light brown if you look at it in a glass, I think. Like,
I don't look at brandy, so I don't know.
All right. Well, let's move on.
Jason is holding a lightsaber and someone wielding a red blade attacks him from above. His opponent is bigger and stronger than he is. Despite the danger, Jason is enjoying himself. So we're just jumping right into it.
All of a sudden, Luke is standing in the doorway and Jason fumbles the lightsaber he's holding and drops it.
Never mind.
Luke enters his office and calls the lightsaber to him as Jason apologizes. He had come to ask for help, but Luke wasn't here.
The lightsaber was just sitting there, so he picked it up to practice and got carried away with it. Luke says a lightsaber shouldn't be taken up lightly. Jason says he could learn. He's not old enough.
He says he's been practicing with a spare pipe in his room. Luke says, not yet, but it will happen soon enough. Jason says Luke is the teacher, so he must be right.
We're all Jason in this moment.
Practicing lightsabering with a spare pipe in your room?
Or just with whatever you got handy.
I don't know. I never really did that.
No?
No.
I'm sorry.
All of my imagination stuff happens in my brain.
Okay. Luke says, don't assume the teacher is always right. Though in this instance, he is. And I like that Luke says that.
Yeah, but then he immediately undermines himself by saying, but right now I am right, and you should listen to me.
Luke then asks if Jason is ready for his trip. Jason says he's packed and all of his animals are fed.
He actually came here to ask Luke to help convince Tenel Ka to come with them. Jaina and Loey are going. It just won't be the same without Tenel Ka. Jason says she made up some dumb excuse about Karuska Gems being boring. And you know what? She's kind of right.
But she didn't sound bored. She sounded worried and nervous. Luke says, we must think for ourselves, and sometimes that means making unpopular decisions. Tenel Ka had good reasons to not go on this trip.
Tenel Ka wakes from a dream. She was being chased by black-cloaked, shadowy figures with purple faces. She's never seen one, but knows they are Night Sisters. They were destroyed before she was born, so why is she dreaming about them now?
Tenel Ka's grandmother is sending an ambassador to check in on her. His name is Ifra. She doesn't want her friends to know she's a princess. She's glad they'll be visiting Lando's Gem Diver Station when the ambassador is here.
Jason, Jaina, Lobaka, Luke, and R2 go to greet Lando. Lando and the kids board the ship. Lobot is already at the controls. They head to Gem Diver Station. It orbits at the fringe of Yavin's upper atmosphere.
Lando says the pressure in the gas giant crushes elements together into rare quantum crystals called Karuska Gems, and the station mines the gems. A shipment is about to head out, and Lando shows it to the kids before it does. And you had a funny comment here, I think. About how Lando's always mining something.
Yes, in the EU, everybody extrapolated from his like venture at Bespin that he's just always mining something.
Yeah, even Zahn does this.
Yeah.
In the original Thrawn trilogy, he's got the stuff at Niklon, and in the Hand of Thrawn duology, it's the underwater mining thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just a miner, I guess.
Lando's always mining stuff. The gems are found nowhere else in the galaxy, making them incredibly valuable. Prospectors are always checking out other gas giants, but have had no luck so far. The gems are also very dangerous to mine.
The gems are the hardest substance known in the galaxy. Lando has a broker on Borgo Prime who sells them for a percentage of the profits. Jason asks if they can help with the mining, and Jaina adds they'd like to see how it's done. Now, it should be noted that even though we've already seen Borgo Prime in the Anakin books, this is the first instance, publishing-wise, of Borgo Prime that was, of course, later used in Skeleton Crew.
Like, in publishing order.
Yeah.
Lando is at first reluctant, but they talk him into it, and he'll accompany them on the trip. They go down in a submersible mining environment. It looks like a large diver bell to Jason. Lando says it's covered in a fine skin of quantum armor that was originally developed by the Empire.
I'm pretty sure that armor is a callback to the Sun Crusher Remember, that had the quantum armor on it. It made it almost indestructible. And Anderson made that, so using it here.
Of course.
How did you feel reading this part with your sub-mechanophobia?
Bad.
Yeah.
Not like right now, but like as they get deeper and deeper and the tether like disconnects and then reconnects. Like
it was, I thought this was really well written. The sequence, like I was kind of terrified.
Like when the kids are just like walking around upstairs and Lando's like, it's almost like he's like pitching to an investor, like he's doing his dumb I'm a mining guy spiel. I was like, oh my god, when are we going to get to something in this book? Like, when is something going to happen? And then they start descending in this horrible submarine. And I was like, okay, I wanted something to happen, but not like this. Like, it's not an ocean, but no. It might as well
be. Yeah, it feels like one.
Like, same vibe, almost way worse, honestly.
And the lava is space and the ocean are very similar.
Yeah, but like, this isn't space. This is the atmosphere of a gas giant.
Also similar to the ocean, apparently.
Yeah, because it's just a bunch of gas. I hated it. I just hated it. Not like it was bad writing, just like I personally was very stressed out reading it.
Lando calls the submersible the Fast Hand as they head deep into Yavin. It's being lowered by an energy tether. Lando says they'll be jostled a bit, but it won't break. Louis asks, what happens if it does break?
Lando says they have life support and would survive until help arrived. But there's nothing to worry about. Everything will be fine. And then a gust of wind almost knocks them free. Anytime someone says everything will be fine, you know that everything will not be fine.
Although not in the way you expected, I think, here, for things to go wrong.
Yeah.
Once they are deep enough, Lando has each of them take a turn at the controls looking for gems. Loewy and Jaina don't find anything, but Jason actually finds one. Lando says it's big enough to buy half a city block in Coruscant, which is pretty impressive.
Jason says he'll give it to his mom for her birthday.
Wow.
That's so nice. Lando says something like, Han's never even given Leia something that valuable. Just a dumb planet called Dathomir. The ship is then hit by another gem tossed about by the storm they are in. They start rising up and make it back safely.
And we're just like, whoo!
Yeah, and then it's like, oh, well, the relief only lasts so long. But this next thing that happens, it doesn't stress me out.
Typical Star Wars.
Yeah, normal Star Wars stuff.
Once they're back at the station, an unidentified fleet appears. It looks like an Imperial fleet to Jaina, as she recognizes several of the types of ships. She says there are more ships than security here can handle.
The fleet has a large ship in the middle that Jaina doesn't recognize. It looks like some kind of modified assault shuttle. Communications are jammed and no demands have been made. Jason and Jaina think they're the target. They can feel it in the Force.
The defense satellites are quickly destroyed and the modified assault shuttle latches onto the station. Jaina thinks they'll cut through the station's hull. Lando says the station is double armored. They should be just fine.
Jason says unless they have a whole shipment of industrial grade Karuska gems... Security is quickly sent to where the shuttle latched on with full weapons and armor. Lando tells the kids to get to safety. They instead follow him.
Of course they do.
Of course.
The shuttle cuts through the armor and a fight breaks out. Stormtroopers enter, but fire only stun blasts. Behind them stands a tall and sinister woman in a black cape with spines on each shoulder. Remember, don't harm the children, she shouts.
Lando says they need to get to safety and takes them to the shipping chamber. They can't leave the station from here, but it's the safest place on board. Lando locks them in as the battle continues. The door is eventually forced open, and the three kids are stunned.
Ruh-roh.
Lando was also stunned, but he's fine.
So were you surprised to see Jason and Jaina kidnapped again?
No. This is just going to continue to happen to them until they're no longer children, so then it will be called abduction instead of kidnapping.
Do you think at this point it's abduction from their teenagers?
No, they're still children.
Okay.
They're minors. It's still kidnapping.
Miners on a mining station?
Yeah, miners on a mining station.
On Yavin 4, Tenokal wears the scaled armor of a Dathomirian warrior while she awaits for the ambassador. She's trying to send a message.
Yeah.
Not a very subtle one. She thinks about her grandmother, Ta'atchum. Tenokal both admires and despises her. Tenokal has always walked a fine line to both please and annoy her grandmother.
Luke comes to her and says there's a message in the comm center for her. Ambassador Ifra says a meeting on Coruscant has taken longer than expected and he'll be delayed by 2 days. Tenokal gives no outward sign, but inwardly she's not happy. Her friends will be back by then.
That's what you think.
Also, if he's been delayed by 2 days, he should have given her a heads up earlier.
Oh, this was absolutely something that her grandmother orchestrated. There's no question in my mind.
You think?
Yes. I think her grandmother knows that Tenokal is not looking forward to this, and Tenokal has done everything in her power to make things as comfortable for herself, and Ta'atchum was trying to disrupt that.
Oh.
Because that's exactly what she would do.
I didn't get that.
I actually even wonder if she knew about the trip the kids were taking to the station.
Huh. I didn't get that at all.
That's what she does.
Okay.
She's a bit of a narcissist.
I mean, all leaders are.
Fair. Knowing what's wrong, Luke offers to take Tanaka to Coruscant. Nice guy, Luke. Ifra says he must observe Tanaka in her place of study. They're interrupted by an emergency signal.
Lando calls and says Jason, Jaina, and Loey have been kidnapped. Luke asks by who, and Lando says he's not sure, but someone connected to the Empire. Luke says he'll be there in an hour.
Tanaka wants to come too, and Luke says yes. He then apologizes to Ifra. They can't talk or meet now. The two of them head for Gem Diver Station.
Luke tells Lando to not blame himself. He fought well. At first, Lando thought they were pirates after the gems and didn't know the kids were the target until it was too late. He'll do anything to help find them.
I feel really bad for Lando right now.
Yeah.
He's like, I messed up again. Honolulu would be so
mad. This time he didn't cut a deal.
Yeah. But still, he couldn't protect their children.
Yeah. Well, I don't know why you'd ever expect Lando to protect your children. They're force sensitive and he's not.
He's pretty good in a fight.
Yeah, but like...
And he's the adult.
The type of enemies that these stupid children have are not the type of enemies that Lando plus a blaster can deal with, you know?
Yeah. Loblaw confirms that industrial-grade Kuruska gems were used to cut into the station. Lando says they've only made two shipments of those so far, but his broker probably won't tell him who the buyer is.
Luke asks where the broker is. Lando says Borgo Prime. It's an asteroid spaceport and trade center for the dregs of the galaxy. It's a lot like Mos Eisley. Luke should feel right at home. Luke then calls Han and Leia and tells them what happened.
For now, the two of them will do what they can from Coruscant, but they are ready to head out themselves. Luke asks for 10 days before Han comes out with the Falcon. He's got a lead that he and Tanaka will be tracking down.
The three kids wake up in a small room and don't know where they are, but at least they are together and not in binders, though MTD has been taken from Loey.
And Crystal cheered.
Yeah. I hate that old droid.
Something happens to that little droid in every single book so far.
Jason tries the door, and to his surprise, it opens. There's a stormtrooper outside of it, who then closes the door.
Later, the door opens, and a woman walks in. She's beautiful, in a cruel sort of way. And I can just feel you rolling your eyes at this sentence.
It's just that, like, Anderson does this with all of his female villains.
Not just Anderson. Stackpole to the Tooth, Isard. Like,
yeah, you're right. It's just, like, male Star Wars authors in the 90s. Like,
I would actually not even say Star Wars authors. I would say male authors in the 90s. And frankly, even earlier than that.
Like, she can't just be evil. She's got to be sexy. I just don't think somebody who's dabbling in the dark side of the Force thinks a ton about their sex appeal.
Palpatine definitely didn't.
Yeah. But, like, he's a man, so of course.
Fair. She says she's disappointed with how easy it was to take them. She's going to change that, though. They'll be taught new ways. Effective ways.
She tells them to follow, but Jaina says no. She uses the Force to drag them out by the neck. The kids agree to walk since they can't stop that from happening.
Ugh. She introduces herself as Tamith Kai. She's from a new order of Night Sisters. The Empire helped bring them back. They arrive at the bridge as the ship exits hyperspace near the core systems.
They aren't in any system and are seemingly in empty space. Coral is piloting the ship they are on. He thanks them for fixing his ship and allowing him to return to the Empire.
See you, Ted. He'd return by book 3. He's already back in book 2. Were you surprised how soon he popped back up?
I was. Got a little jump scare.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, not really, but, you know.
Then a space station appears in front of them. Tamith Kai says they'll be trained as Dark Jedi for the Empire here and welcomes them to the Shadow Academy.
Luke and Tenelka are in the Off Chance, an old blockade runner that Lando gave to them.
Really? You can do anything you can, you give them an old blockade runner, not the Lady Luck? Then again, that might be recognized before they're going. But still.
I feel like you're over-criticizing Lando here. He gave them a ship that would not be super noticeable at a place like Borgo Prime.
True.
The Lady Luck is literally a luxury yacht.
It is.
Like, it would be so out of place there.
I was just giving him a hard time.
Yeah, you are giving him a hard time. You're giving Lando much of a hard time in this story. It's not his fault. Tenelka is a little shy around Luke and isn't sure what to say. Fair. He is super weird. The last time he, like, walked up to the kids and talked to them at the end of the last story, it was very like, how do you do, fellow kids? Luke has them go over their cover story again.
Tanaka is Beknet, while Luke is Iltar. They trade in archaeological treasures and are coming from a secret dig on Ossus where they found an old Republic treasure vault. They need industrial-grade Karuska gems to cut into it.
Tenelka feels foolish and out of place on Borgo Prime. She's never been anywhere like this. She doesn't understand it. It both revolts and entices her at the same time. Luke says she doesn't have to come with him to meet the contact, but she says she'll do what she must to rescue her friends.
And actually, this reminds me a lot of Skeleton Crew when the kids first get to Borgo Prime. They're like, what is this place?
Like, it is disgusting, but it's also
kind of cool.
So compelling.
By the way, if you haven't watched Skeleton Crew, go watch it. Great show. They get to Shanko's Hive, a bar, and order drinks. Tenelka tells the bartender they are here for information, and he sends them to a hut information broker. They go to the hut, and he brings over another broker to talk to them.
While talking, Luke asks if anyone else has bought industrial-grade Karuska gems. They need to know if anyone else is capable of stealing their treasure. The broker won't give a name, but says a woman calling herself a Lady of the Evening or a Daughter of Darkness, something like that. Lady of the Evening means something
yeah, totally very different.
Tenelka asks if she said Night Sister, and the broker says, that was it. You know, a Lady of the Evening.
Daughter of Darkness actually makes me think of Shadowheart a little bit.
Daughter of Darkness. Yeah, that's true.
But yeah, Lady of the Evening, I got a good chuckle out of that.
Not to mention that, like, Luke and Tenelka are both, they've both, like, ordered drinks, and Luke has to warn Tenelka, like, don't drink that. It'll, like, kick you all the way out of the system.
Jason asks Coral about his arm. He says it was replaced by a droid arm instead of just healed. It's even better than the old one.
And then Jason says a lot of stuff about, like, oh, we could have given you, like, a nicer arm than that.
Yeah. Actually, this reminds me of Pettigrew in Harry Potter and the arm that Voldemort gives him after he cuts it off.
I know, yeah, you said that, like, when we were talking about this after we'd both read it, and I don't get it.
Okay. I don't actually even remember if anything ever comes with his arm or not, but just, that was just immediately where my mind went. Couldn't tell you why.
So strange. It's not like that at all. They get off the shuttle, and there's a beautiful man waiting for them. I want to just say that this is from Jason's point of view, but, like, there's a beautiful man waiting for them.
Yeah.
My impression is that straight men don't often think that other men are beautiful.
Very handsome. Depending on the context, maybe even pretty. But, yeah, typically not beautiful.
Just very beautiful, man.
Yeah.
So beautiful. He introduces himself as Brakkus. He's the leader of the Shadow Academy. The twins recognize the name and recount the story Luke told them of how he couldn't face the ugliness inside himself.
We, of course, know Brakkus previously from I, Jedi and New Rebellion. And he was also very pretty in those books, too. He's just...
Luke describes him as pretty.
Yeah, he's just a very, I guess, well-groomed man?
Okay.
Who I think has, like, perfect facial features?
This is my feeling. So we see him in New Rebellion, right? Which is written by a woman.
Yes.
We see him at I, Jedi, which is written by Stackpole. Was he described as beautiful there? I don't remember.
I remember
in New Rebellion because I remember we talked about, like, why is Luke describing this man as beautiful?
I think Corran probably at least thought he was, like, very good looking in the book.
Okay.
My guess.
I was going to say there is sometimes this thing that happens when I don't know about the author's sexuality for New Rebellion, right? But there is this thing that sometimes happens when a woman is writing from a man's perspective or a man is writing from a woman's perspective, and they almost, like, accidentally subconsciously slip in how they would think of seeing this person.
So maybe Moista was writing this part instead of Anderson?
Maybe.
Yeah, that actually makes some sense.
Because, so, speaking of Harry Potter, this is a thing that happens a lot in Harry Potter.
Mm.
Harry thinks of Sirius as incredibly handsome. Harry thinks of a lot of boys as, like, very good looking. But when it comes to the girls in his life, all he can come up with is that their hair is nice and they smell good. Like, Ginny's hair smells nice. That is it in terms of attraction. So this is a thing that can happen when the author is not, like, totally aware of their own, like, their own biases and kind of, like, accidentally puts them into the POV character's perspective. And that's kind of what I feel like is happening here.
I think you're right. I bet this is Moista who wrote this part.
And like nobody caught it on an edit because they're thinking more from like a third person omniscient perspective. They're trying to tell us objectively that Brakkus is beautiful.
He's very good looking. It's just,
I just don't think that
Jason would have thought that.
Well, I'm totally happy to go with the idea that Jason is bi or even gay. Like, that's fine with me. I think it would be bi because I think he's into Tenelle Kaa.
Oh, he absolutely is.
I just don't think that the authors were intentionally putting that there.
Yeah.
That's what I think, because it was the 90s.
Yeah, I agree.
So, anyway, back to the beautiful Brakkus who's talking.
Ah, so that's how he tells it, Brakkus replies, in response to the story they told him about what Luke says. He says Luke is right to try to bring back the Jedi. Here, they have a great leader. They just need Imperial Jedi, and then they can unify the Imperial factions and bring about the Second Imperium.
At this point, I was like, what Imperial factions? They've already surrendered, no?
They have, but
the major Imperial faction under Pelion.
Yeah. The way I take it, as there are still some splinter groups, or even people within the proper Empire itself who don't like this and want to return the Empire to its former glory.
Yeah. Who are, I mean, part of this. Like, the big question through the second part of this story is, like, who is the leader that they keep talking about?
Yeah.
It's going to be somebody dumb.
Probably.
That's all I know.
But yeah. I think it, after reading the Hand of Thorn duology, this feels a little weird. And I wish that had been written first, because then this could have been cleaned up in how they describe this, I feel like. But it does fit to me if you pretzel just a little bit. Why am I getting the 1,000-yard stare?
I think you would have to do a lot of pretzeling to make this work post Hand of Thrawn duology.
Really? Like I said, there are some factions, either within the Empire itself or without, who don't like what's going on and want to do their own thing.
I don't think there are a lot of factions left outside of that main fragment at this point. And I think after the whole like fake Thrawn debacle, a lot of the interior factions are cowed. Like, I think they're like, oh no, we have really screwed up for the final time this time. So I just don't buy it.
Okay.
Like I said, I'm very hard to please. Once united, they can defeat the wicked and unlawful New Republic. Jaina says it will not work and asks who the leader is. Tamith Kai says they won't ask questions, just receive indoctrination.
That's healthy.
I wish she hadn't like come out and said it like that. Like, it's just,
she's
so...
a little too mustache twirling.
Yeah, they both are. Like,
I think Brakkus is trying a little harder than she is, though, to not be that.
I guess, but like, to just come out and be like, we're gonna indoctrinate you, like,
yeah,
try harder. You're an embarrassment.
They'll be trained as powerful warriors to serve the Empire. The twins say that won't happen. Luke and their parents will find them, and Loey roars defiantly. Jason then asks where MTD is, and Tamith Kaya says he'll be returned once reprogrammed. The kids are split up and put in separate quarters.
Luke and Tenelle Kaa head for Dathomir. Tenelle Kaa dreams about Night Sisters again. When she gets up, Luke can tell that she didn't sleep well.
Tenelle Kaa asks him about her dream. Luke says he dreamed of them too. Tenelle Kaa says they were all destroyed. How can there be any left? Luke says many from Dathomir are strong in the Force. Someone could have trained them in the ways of evil.
Luke tells Tenelle Kaa about how he met her mother and how she captured him. Tenelle Kaa is at first embarrassed, but then giggles at how ridiculous it is. She's also glad it didn't work out, and Luke agrees.
I really like this scene between the two of them.
It was cute.
Up to this point, Tenelle Kaa has been almost on eggshells around Luke. Like, how do I act around this great and powerful man who's also the uncle of my best friends?
Yeah.
Like, it's very awkward for her, and I think Luke does a really good job of just being his normal everyday self, and Tenelle kind of gets that, oh, he's not this.
He's not like just a legend, he's a person.
Yeah, yeah. I really like that. This is probably my favorite character. Of the 8 books we've read so far between Jason, Jaina, and Anakin, this moment right here is my favorite Luke moment far and away.
Yeah, I thought Luke was really good in this book. I have no idea why he didn't bring more adults with him.
It's a Jedi thing.
But besides that, like, his characterization was good.
Yeah. And it was also nice for him to join in the adventure.
Yeah.
Like, for some of the Anakin books, it made a lot of sense for him not to be part of it. For the first book in this series, I don't think they actually needed to write him away from Yavin 4. I think he could have been at the Academy the entire time.
Yeah, I don't see the issue.
But, so I like that he's much more involved in this one. And given what's happening, it makes sense that he would be more involved.
Well, I guess correction. I do see the issue in the first one, because up to this point, unfortunately, like, Luke has been written as being like very all powerful. So the conflict at the end of the first book
Could have been too easy if he was there for
like,
it.
Like, he basically could, you know, like Mara says in the Hand of Thrawn duology, like, last chance for you to wave your hands and make this all go away, because like, he could.
Yeah.
The way that he's been written, which I don't agree with, but you know, that's right. Probably why they wrote him away. So Fair. That they could still maintain that he could wave his hands and make everything go away if they wanted him to.
Luke asks Tenelka why she hasn't told her friends who her parents are. She says she's not ashamed of her parents, but she's not proud to be born to the royal family of Hapes. The lineage is tainted by bloodthirsty, power-hungry tyrants.
She's done nothing to earn, choose, or deserve the throne. She needs to prove she's not like her ancestors before she can tell her friends.
So we discussed this a little bit in the first book. How do you like this reasoning as for her why she's not told her friends?
Oh, I think it's fine.
I thought this was great.
I think it tracks really well with her, like, Dathomiran sensibilities.
And just how proud she is.
Yeah. Not just proud, but, like, she has a deep, like, moral and ethical stance on things.
I don't deserve this throne, so it's not really my throne to talk about, almost.
Yeah. I do think there's also a little bit of, like, she doth protest too much here. Like, I think she has come up with a really good reason why she's not telling them, but I honestly think that the, like, actual reason is that she just doesn't want them to treat her differently.
I think both could be true.
And it's different than Jason and Jaina's situation, because at least Leia is, like, sort of an elected official. Like, she's royalty, but royalty to a planet that doesn't exist anymore. Yeah. So like, it's her authority in the New Republic is not related to that. It's
related to what she's done.
Yeah, it's related to her actions and her merits.
Yeah.
And Tenelka wants to prove herself meritus, which is great.
Yeah. Jason tells a joke and asks how many stormtroopers it takes to change a glow panel. Jaina asks how many. Jason says two. One to change it, and the other to shoot him and take credit for all the work.
If the stormtrooper even makes the shot, am I right?
Yeah.
Tamith Kai just glares at Jason. He says he can tell she's from Dathomir. They aren't known for their sense of humor. He and Jaina are pushed into a classroom, and Loey and other students are in there.
I do love just Jason trying to push their buttons in this book.
Yeah.
Brakkus enters and immediately starts teaching. He starts simple enough, but eventually says they need to draw on strong emotions like anger, fear, hate, and aggression. Jaina whispers, that's not true. And actually, I really like how he starts out like talking about the Force. It's not exactly how Luke would do it, but it's not that far off initially, I feel like.
Well, Brakkus basically feels that you can use both sides of the Force.
Yeah.
And that's no problem. I wish that was true.
Yeah.
The student next to her says it is true because Brakkus said so. They then stand up and say, this girl isn't worthy of being Brakkus's pupil. Brakkus tells Jaina that she can make her own judgments, but never encourage others to disbelieve him ever again.
Weirdly, kind of open-minded for Brakkus, but also very close-minded at the same time. It's like, believe what you want, but just don't convince others to not believe me.
I wouldn't say it's open-minded. I would say instead that they know, Brakkus and Tamith Kai know, that they're doing an experiment with Jason, Jaina, and Loey, and they have accepted that they might not be able to indoctrinate them. And so they just don't want the errors of that experiment to spread beyond those three. Like, it's fine if they resist, ultimately. Like, they would prefer them not to, but it's fine. But if it ruins all of these other students, then that's a problem.
Brakkus then continues the lesson and says, they do not learn only one side of the Force here. They will fulfill their destinies by using both the light and the dark, blending it together to reach their full potential. Jaina interrupts and says, that's wrong. The light brings freedom. The dark brings only bondage.
Brakkus then electrocutes her.
That's a bit of
an escalation.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's called the Shadow Academy, Tom. I don't know what you expected. Did you expect puppies and rainbows?
I would hope so.
Flowers and croissants.
Oh, croissant sounds good right now, doesn't it?
Loey leaps forward in a fit of rage. Stormtroopers enter, and Loey throws a bench at them. See, I think it's fine to act on anger sometimes.
There are moments, yes. As long as it doesn't come to define you. Jason gets to Jaina. She's okay. She's then able to calm Loey down before the stormtroopers are able to hurt him badly. Bracca says they must be disciplined and send them back to their quarters. He adds that Loey's anger shows he has great potential.
And Loey is, like, so sad about this.
Yeah. Oh.
Despite the circumstances, Tenel Ka is happy to be back home. It's technically her second home in the galaxy, but it's first in her heart. They get to the Singing Mountain Clan and go see Ogwen, Tenel Ka's great-grandmother.
They ask her if there are any knights still on Dathomir. She tells them of a newly formed order. It's young and allied with the Empire. Their evil is subtle, and she tells them to not seek them out.
Tenel Ka says they must. She has pledged friendship with the three who have been kidnapped. Ogwen says they must present their case to the Council of Sisters.
Brakkus is in his private office, thinking while reviewing the day's records and recordings. He needs to send a report to their leader soon. The capture of Luke's students has been worth the risk given their strength in the Force.
But their focus is all wrong. They've been taught so much in the wrong way. They are too calm, too passive, and contemplate too much. His job is to make them Dark Jedi.
Some students have very little talent, but he sees the potential for true greatness in them and thinks they could be as powerful as Darth Vader. And given that, you know, Vader's the grandparents of two of them, that tracks.
Yeah.
But there's also a danger in creating Dark Jedi. Brakkus' job is to keep them in line and not get too ambitious. The Great Leader also could destroy the Shadow Academy whenever he wants to by making it self-destruct. And I actually really like that this Dark Side sect, or Dark Side sect is not even quite the right description, but it's close enough, I think, is aware of how dangerous making a Dark Jedi is because of that ambition they feed into them and how they can easily turn on them. Like, we've seen that happen constantly in stories about the Sith in both Disney canon and the EU. So I very much like that they are aware of this foible of the
Dark
Side. They're
walking a fine line there.
And if they mess up, well, they all die.
Brakkus is never allowed to leave the Shadow Academy. He has to stay until the students prove themselves. He'll have Tamith Kai work on the Wookiee. She's good at exploiting anger, and he will focus on the twins.
I think it's really interesting that he's not allowed to leave. He's imprisoned here.
He's on the hook.
Brakkus just needs to figure out what the kids want, then he'll give it to them, which is a very evil thing that evil people would do.
Ah, yes, finding out what somebody wants and then giving it to them.
Yep.
So evil.
Later, Brakkus and Jason are in a training chamber. Brakkus gives Jason a lightsaber and tells them it's his.
Jason says he hasn't completed his training yet. Brakkus says Luke is holding him back. Lightsaber skills are among the first things taught at the Shadow Academy. What good is a Jedi who isn't ready to fight for the cause?
I think one reason why I really like the Shadow Academy and Brakkus as the villains is he does such a good job of seeming so reasonable at times. Like, if you're going to fight to protect someone, you need to be able to fight.
If you say so. He gives Jason the lightsaber, and Jason takes it. Jason asks, what's to stop him from killing Brakkus? Brakkus says Jason won't kill an unarmed opponent. Unless the curriculum has changed at Yavin 4, he should be just fine.
But if Jason did kill him, it would be a significant step down a dark path for the Empire. Great responses, I just gotta say. Jason will fight hollow remotes, but real opponents could be slipped in sometimes. Jason feels the gem in his boot and feels comfort that it hasn't been found. Do you want to talk about that gem real fast?
Yeah, so he hid this gem in his boot, in his sock, like before they were kidnapped.
Mm-hmm.
And I find it so completely unbelievable that these kids were not like stripped of literally all their belongings, including clothes and shoes, and issued standard like
whatever
clothing for this academy. I think it's a huge plot hole. It makes Brakkus and Tamith Kai look extremely stupid.
I wonder if they let the kids keep their own clothing to try and... Like, Brakkus keeps trying to appear reasonable to them, right? So by letting them keep their own possessions, that's one way of appearing reasonable.
If that's the case, then the kids at least need to wonder about it.
I agree.
Or the evil guys need to say something about it. Because as it is, it just seems like an enormous plot hole.
Yeah.
And it will bother me the rest of the time because this stupid gem is the way that they get out.
Yeah.
So I just think they needed to like do a little bit more massaging here.
Agreed.
I don't know what they were thinking. And Abyssin appears. Jason tries to calm it down, but fails. He's forced to fight it and defeats it. Brakkus congratulates him, says Jason has great potential and he just needs the opportunity to practice.
Loey is mad at himself for giving in to his anger. He draws comfort from his friend's example. They could resist it, so can he.
Tamith Kai enters Loey's room with two stormtroopers. She says he has the capacity for great anger, which is his greatest strength, but he's not skilled in the ways of the Force. She's going to teach him how to use that anger to become more powerful.
Loey is put in a large, unfinished room. She leaves him there for what seems like hours. Eventually, he falls asleep out of boredom.
He's woken by sudden loud noises and flashing lights. It stops quickly, and then Tamith Kai taunts him as he tries to ignore her. The lights and sound come on again, and then a large black object is dropped right next to Loey.
It's a sonic generator, and it's in control of his torture. He must destroy it to complete the lesson, but it's too heavy to move. It can only be lifted with the Force.
Loey tries to move it, but fails. Tamith Kai says he can't do it with his weakest muscle. He must use his anger. Loey knows what she's doing, and he starts taking calming breaths.
Then, jets of water hit him. Light, sound, and water all keep rotating to torture him. Tamith Kai says he can end this. He has the power to do so.
Like, this is the thing that throws me off. They are so intense that they are waterboarding a child.
Yeah.
But they didn't search for the stupid little gem that's in Jason's foot. Like, come on.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, I think this is one of the most effective and powerful scenes in this book of just... This is dark.
Oh, yeah.
This is very dark.
It's very dark. I'm just torturing a child. Tamith Kai says his friends can't help him. They've already learned the truth of her words. He then sees images of Jason with a lightsaber and Jaina throwing heavy objects around. Both look happy.
Loey howls in fury and knows no more. He wakes up in his cell. Tamith Kai is there and says he's done well.
As a reward, she's brought back his droid. After Loey unleashed his anger, they weren't able to repair the generator. She leaves, and MTD says Loey is lucky the Shadow Academy has taken such an interest in him. Someone's drunk the Kool-Aid.
A little bit. He also says the Imperials are very perceptive and have even included him in their plans. Loey asks, what's wrong with MTD? MTD says nothing. His programming has been enhanced.
He will now be part of Loey's instruction here. Loey turns the droid off. He may have given in during a moment of weakness, but he won't give up. He hopes the twins feel the same way.
I really like that it's MTD being so out of character that makes Loey go, oh no, this is wrong.
Yeah.
Tenel Ka speaks with the Council of Sisters. She's told visitors will come at dusk, and her questions will be answered then. Luke says it's difficult to wait while their friends are in danger, but sometimes it's the right action to choose. How very Jedi of you.
So Jedi. At dusk, a Rancor with two riders approaches. Tenel Ka can tell one is a Night Sister, the other is a man, and seems to be treated as an equal.
They get to the base of the mountain and call up to the Singing Mountain Clan. The Night Sister introduces herself as Vonda Ra, and her companion is Velas. He's the best of her male students, and he starts calling up a storm.
Vonda says they are looking for new trainees and invites men and women, noble and slave. She can't guarantee a spot with them, but they will test everyone who comes. Thunder and lightning fill the sky.
She says their settlement is in the Great Canyon, and they leave. Tenel Ka asks what they should do. Luke says they'll go to the Great Canyon. They are looking for people to train.
Jaina pushes the lightsaber back towards Brakkus. She says she won't fight anymore. She wants to see her brother and Loey. Brakkus says he'll let her see them if there are not more interruptions in class and fights right now.
Jaina agrees. Brakkus then says she'll be in a holo disguise. It won't hinder her movement, but it may be distracting. Did you know what the disguise was?
Mm-mm.
Brakkus steps away, and Darth Vader steps forward.
Jaina is shocked to see her grandfather as he attacks. They fight a long time, neither gaining the upper hand. They are too equally matched. Eventually, Brakkus ends the fight, and the hollows drop. Jaina has been fighting Jason. And they were both disguised as Darth Vader.
Similar to the Loey torture scene, this is one of my favorite moments in this book. It's just, I think it's really well done. Very evil and conniving.
It is. It's just funny to imagine it from the outside.
Yeah.
Like, that there's two Darth Vaders just, like, wailing on each other.
Coral had been watching the fight in the control room with Brakkus. He says they could have killed each other. Brakkus doubts it, but if one does, well, then they'll know who's stronger.
He ends the session, turns off the monitor. He doesn't want to hear their outraged cries. Brakkus says, I did promise to let her see her brother. I don't know why she would be so upset. Coral walks away, so Brakkus can't see the depth of his uncertainty.
Coral is having doubts.
Coral is having doubts, even though he was apparently reprogrammed when he came here. Poor guy.
Tenel Ka and Luke ride a Rancor. Luke says he once had to kill a Rancor. It was a shame. They're such fine creatures. Which puts the perspective of Return of the Jedi into very different contexts.
Yeah. He's fought and had to kill, but learned to try to do everything in his power to turn a situation instead. Thinalka asks, what about a dark side user? They wouldn't hesitate to kill him. Luke says that's the difference between the light and dark. The light isn't trying to kill. They demonstrate their differences by acting on their beliefs.
Yeah, and I think that sums it up pretty well.
Yeah.
They get to the Night Sister camp, and Thinalka says they've come here to learn the ways of the Force. Vonda Ra asks for demonstration. Thinalka says she has some training and moves a lamp around.
Vonda Ra is impressed and welcomes them. She says they'll be taken to a place of instruction among the stars. She then asks Luke to lift the lamp and light the tent.
He instead lifts a Rancor head chair and sends it through the roof of the tent, letting light in. Vonda Ra is impressed and says he understands the dark side. Which is
technically true.
Yeah, he definitely does. An Imperial shuttle will leave at dawn, and both of them will be on it.
Jason, Jaina, and Loey are happy to see each other. Then they see Brakkus and Tamith Kai's faces and are no longer excited. Brakkus says they must learn to work together for this exercise.
Loey will control small spherical remotes to protect the twins. Objects will be randomly hurled at them, and Loey will be able to shoot the objects. The remotes have powerful lasers, and if he misses and hits one of the twins, he could cause serious injury.
The twins will use wooden sticks and the Force to defend themselves, but they'll be blindfolded. There will be three levels. They'll start with hard balls, then rocks that can break bones, and finally knives.
This is a very dark side take on Jedi training.
Yeah. I don't know. If you want to learn to use the Force, don't get hit by a rock that could break your bones. Try harder.
The twins stand back to back as the balls start flying. Brakkus tells them to use their anger to be more powerful. Jason thinks of what Luke has taught him. To be calm and passive, and he lets the Force flow through him.
They're able to deflect some of the balls, but both of them get hit. Loey is shooting everything he can, but just can't get them all. He has been able to destroy one of the launchers when the knives start flying.
Loey decides to try and break the program and is able to shut down the entire training sequence. MTD says he'll be in trouble for this. Tamith Kai asks what Loey did.
Brakkus says exactly what he was told to do. He defended his friends, and it shows initiative. Brakkus tells Loey he'll be a fine addition to the Defenders of the Empire, and MTD turns around and is so proud of him, even though he was like, you're going to be in trouble, a few minutes ago. Brakkus is so happy with their progress that he decides to raid Yavin 4 for more students.
So I like that Loey's way to figure this out is, on the one hand, a very light side reaction, but also Brakkus tries to twist that to be, no, you broke things like you're supposed to on the dark side.
Yeah. I mean, it's a weird note of fairness from Brakkus.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I didn't tell you not to do it this way. I just told you to, like, defend these people, and you figured out a way to do it.
It kind of goes back to that walking line of dark Jedi of, like, they're ambitious, so you want them to be, to think outside the box, but you also don't want them to be too ambitious.
Yeah.
Luke and Thinalka aboard the Imperial shuttle. It is captained by Garrowin, who calls it the Shadow Chaser. It's a unique state-of-the-art ship, and their journey will take 2 days.
Garrowin tests them on the journey. At one point, she picks up Thinalka with the Force. Luke says he can do that too, and picks Garrowin up and puts her in the escape pod.
Thinalka quickly jettisons it, which... hey, it works! But thinking back to the Black Fleet crisis, they're in hyperspace right now.
Oh, yeah. She did.
Yeah. Or just trapped in hyperspace forever the way what's his face was.
Yeah.
The autopilot gets them to the Shadow Academy, but it's just empty space. Then a cloaked space station appears.
On said space station, the twins both ask for pain relievers but are denied. Jason decides it's time to escape, takes the gem out of his shoe, and cuts the control panel in his room open. So this is the other thing. Like, multiple days have passed. I think it's been like a week. Actually,
something like that.
They're still wearing the same clothes.
I mean, maybe same boots, but they've changed clothes, hopefully.
But it hasn't been mentioned.
I know.
Like, God, it's just, it's enormous. You could fly the Falcon through this plot hole. He has no idea what to do with all the wires and tries to think about what Jaina would do.
He fiddles with the wires and eventually gets the door open. He has a general idea of where the other two are and goes for Jaina first. They then go get Loey, but MTD is not happy to see them.
Jaina has a plan. Loey will slice into the main station controls, drop the cloaking device, and lock all doors to everyone's quarters. They'll then go to the shuttle bay, and Jaina will fly them out. Loey has some trouble, but after threatening MTD, he helps drop the cloak and lock the doors.
Brakkus is typing up plans for the assault on the Jedi Academy. Tamith Kai will lead it in a few days. The leader has already approved of the plan, but Brakkus feels an uneasiness. He goes into the hallway, when suddenly his office door then closes and locks behind him. Someone will be punished for this.
The twins and Loey get to the hangar and are ready to fight their way onto the Imperial shuttle that has just arrived, but they are surprised to find Luke and Tennel Kaa on board. Coral watches the reunion happen from the control center.
He calls Brakkus and Tamith Kai and says the prisoners are attempting to escape. Tamith Kai is furious by being locked in and uses the force to shove the door open. Luke is about to ask who's in charge, but then he senses a presence he hasn't felt in a long time. So, I know in the first book, some of the references and callbacks to lines from the trilogy kind of bothered you. Did this one?
Not as much.
I thought this one made a lot of sense, and it was much less in this book overall.
It's just fine. Like, it didn't really ping me one way or the other.
Okay.
So, I wanted to be a little jerk and be like, no, actually, it really bothers me. But I'm going to be honest, it didn't bother me.
Okay.
There you go. I wasn't, like, delighted by it, though. Luke has to see and goes to the hangar doors as Brakkus appears. Brakkus asks if Luke is impressed by how well he's done for himself. No, he's just an insecure little baby looking for validation.
Yep.
Before they can fight, the shuttle opens fire, which closes the door between them.
Tennel Kaa then goes to the rest of the doors, sealing each one. But Tamith Kai is at the last one. They fight, and Tennel Kaa kicks Tamith Kai's knee, breaking it.
This was another one of those moments where I was like, these bad guys are just so stupid.
I did appreciate that, like, Tamith Kai is taunting her about the force and whatnot, and then when Tennel Kaa breaks her leg, she thinks to herself, like, sometimes the old ways are better.
Well, because Tamith Kai is, like, spending all this time, like, gathering energy to her that she's going to use against them all. And Tennel Kaa is just like,
crack!
Arrow to the knee.
Before that was a thing.
Before that was a thing. The docking bay doors suddenly open and the shuttle leaves. Loey and Jaina had been trying to open it, but they weren't the ones who actually did. Coral did. He thinks to himself he will never tell Brakkus or Tamith Kai.
That's smart.
That is smart.
Brakkus is worried that they'll be blown up by their leader. Coral says hopefully not. For now, they'll move the station so the rebels can't find it. On Yavin 4, the twins call their parents.
Leia says scouts are already looking for the Shadow Academy. Luke doubts that they'll attack the Yavin Academy now. They'll have to look for recruits elsewhere.
Engineers will come and look over the shuttle, but Luke gets to keep it. MTD has also been fixed. Tennel Kaa calls her parents and tells them that she's okay.
She then asks to speak to her grandmother. Her grandmother says her sources tell her she should be proud of Tennel Kaa. She apologizes that Ifra won't be able to make it. He has to go to the Duros system instead.
So, Ta'atrim knows exactly everything that has happened, I think.
Yeah, I guess so.
Luke meets privately with Jason and hands him a lightsaber. He asks what he learned at the Shadow Academy. Jason says Luke was right. He's not ready.
He's physically capable, but not mentally or emotionally ready. Jason will wait until Luke thinks he's ready. With Brakkus and the Shadow Academy out there, Luke is afraid that that time will come all too soon.
Ending the book. I also have to point one thing out real fast. This ending of Luke thinking, like, you know, they'll have to be trained to fight sooner than he wants to fits in so well with the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah.
And also the High Republic. Like, whenever there's a crisis at hand, the Jedi have to accelerate what the younglings and trainees and Padawans are doing. And it fits in really nicely in a terrible way.
Yeah.
So what do you think of this book?
Overall, I liked it. I think my biggest issue was the plot hole that I've already mentioned with the gem. These stinky children, like, teenagers do not smell good. Even when they've regularly showered. And so this like lack of a clothing change or like boots being confiscated or anything, like, it just, the gem thing was,
it's kind of like Tahiri going into Anakin's room. I just don't think it's something the authors really thought that much about.
I just, like, it's just insulting to your audience. And, like, I understand that it's a younger audience, but I feel like they would think about this too. I feel like I would have. I feel like I've read young adult books where this would have been a plot point, like, that they would have spent more effort into. There would have been this, like, very nerve-wracking scramble to try and, like, conceal the gem when all of their clothing and stuff was confiscated. There would have been some, like, tricksy way that one of them, like, secreted it away and then had to go back for it later or something.
Maybe, like, hidden Loey's fur or something.
Yeah, and that just didn't...
Yeah, I would have liked that kind of scene, I agree.
...materialize, but... There was a lot of stuff I liked about this one. It moved a lot faster than Heirs of the Force. A lot of action. Nerve-wracking mining dive into Yavin. I like the idea of the Shadow Academy. I will say I think the villains are a little too goofy for me. But if I had read this at a younger age, I probably wouldn't have had as much of an issue with it.
They're right for the age group.
I think the thing that bothered me was the oscillation. Like, they are so effective at literally torturing Loey. And then Tenelka just breaks that other that same person's knee and she's completely incapacitated. Like, it's just the up and down there was kind of hard for me. Like, I wanted the kids to be able to show that they could outsmart the bad guys, not because the bad guys were idiots, but because these kids are smart, if that makes sense.
It does. And I think they did that to an extent with each of them doing something for the escape.
I think so too. I think it just got a little too goofy. And the gem being a big plot issue. Mm-hmm. And I really liked Luke in this book.
Yeah.
Like, aside from not bringing another adult with him, he was well characterized. And it felt more like my old buddy Luke rather than the weird guy who's been wandering around through these kids' books recently. How about you?
So, while I enjoy Heirs of the Force, I think Shadow Academy is a much stronger entry in the Young Jedi Knight series. We get the action much faster, and I think the conflict in the story is just much more interesting. We've only seen a little bit of Brakkus in two other books, The New Rebellion and I, Jedi, and this is actually his first published appearance, and the story of him in Heirs of the Force was the first time he's actually ever even mentioned. And I think reading those other two books first adds more weight to his appearance in this series. He's not just a brand new villain who was a former student, but he's a character we've actually seen and gotten to know a little bit, like, not super well, but I think even just that little bit adds more to this series than having reading these ones first.
Yeah, I agree. Like, a chronological order is really better than publication order for this instance.
Right. Like, sometimes one is better than the other. And for Brakkus, chronological order is, I think, much better than publication.
Yeah.
And, you know, I already mentioned this earlier, but I think Jason and Jaina having to fight each other is one of the most effective moments in this series. Pitting twin against twin is bad enough, but making them fight a hollow of Vader just twists the knife that much deeper. That scene, along with Loey being tortured, are just surprisingly dark moments in this book that work, I think, really, really well.
Would you say it's foreshadowing?
No.
The twins fighting each other?
The only reason why I wouldn't say it is because of when this came out.
Oh, it came out pretty early.
Yeah, this came out in 95.
Yeah.
And Anderson and Moista had no idea where the story of the twins would go 20 years down the line.
Well, it'll probably be fun to look back on. I don't know very much about, like...
You know there's conflict between the two in the future.
Yeah, that's what I know. That's all.
I think this book also does a better job of showing how this series is for an older audience than the Junior Jedi Knights books are. This book isn't about a galaxy-wide problem, but it's certainly a much bigger scale than anything Anakin and Tyri ever had to deal with. Like, that was very small and localized, and so is Coral and the TIE Fighter. This feels much more appropriate. It's like, it's not a Death Star. But it is...
They've found a threat.
Yeah. And I completely agree with you. After being sidelined in the Anakin books and the first book in this series, it's nice to see Luke take on a more active role. He's still not the main character, but when the three of his students are kidnapped, it makes sense for him to, you know, help rescue them. And I also really liked his interactions with Tenelka. I thought they were a really different, fun pair. Like, it would have been very easy, I think, to just keep the main four children together at all times, not really... do something different. So I appreciate that in this book, we see Tenelka spend almost all her time with Luke and not the other three. I think it does a great job of showing who she is rather than just through the lens of the other three.
Yeah, and it also, like, finally gives us the opportunity to see who Luke is as a teacher.
Yeah.
Like, we honestly haven't seen very much of
and
that.
I really thought the teaching moments in this book, while small, were really effective.
Yeah.
All right. Now, let's turn to the future. What's coming next? How soon will Jason and the others be ready to wield lightsabers?
I think well before the end of these Young Jedi Knights books.
Do you think it'll happen during the problems with the Shadow Academy?
I don't know, because I just don't have a sense of how quickly that's going to be resolved. But I think within, like, the next year of their lives.
Okay. Any idea how many books that is? Or hard to say?
I have no idea. So far, the books have spanned, like, literally a couple of weeks and a week, so...
Will the conflict with the Shadow Academy speed that timeline up the way the Clone Wars did?
I don't really think so.
Even though Luke thinks it might?
I just think it's going to be a different conflict that speeds up their rise to, like, knighthood, basically.
Well, getting a lightsaber doesn't necessarily make you a Jedi Knight.
That's true. though these people seem to sort of equate that. Because Jason literally says, I haven't finished my training, when Brakkus hands him a lightsaber. Like, that's the last thing you do.
Well, he could have just meant specifically training with a lightsaber rather than training to be a Jedi.
He hasn't trained with a lightsaber.
Exactly, so he hasn't finished his training with it.
It's a weird way to say that if you haven't even started your training. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Okay. Will Brakkus still strike at Yavin 4, or is Luke right that he won't risk it now?
No, I think he's still going to risk it.
Okay.
Where else is he going to get candidates?
That's actually my next question for you.
Like, Yavin 4 is like fish in a barrel.
Where else will Brakkus look for students if not Yavin 4?
I mean, he can do the thing that Luke did back in the Jedi Academy trilogy. He can go searching far and wide for Force users. It's just a lot. But, like, he can't leave the Academy. So he has to send this weird lady out to do it.
Will Brakkus ever find out that Coral was the one to let them escape?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Consequences?
I mean, I hope that Coral is going to eventually kind of like break his programming and leave, not even necessarily to join the New Republic, but just to get out of here. So I hope the consequences are that Coral breaks with this faction and can live a peaceful life somewhere else. But I think it's going to be a little bit hairy for a minute.
And finally, who is the mysterious leader of the Shadow Academy?
Yeah, I have no idea.
None?
No.
Moth Distro returns.
I mean, I feel that it has to be someone who's at least, like, vaguely Force sensitive for them to, like, so highly value these dark Jedi in training. I just don't have any idea of who that could be. Like, I don't know if they're a person that we've already encountered.
Okay. Cooler makes his return.
Huh?
Dolph makes his return.
Maybe.
Except he died.
I almost feel like it's just going to be a new...
someone brand new we haven't met.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that wraps up our thoughts on Shadow Academy. Next up, we'll be discussing Mischance, written by Michael A. Stackpole. We look forward to that episode coming out on September 21st.
Thanks to Thomas for editing.
And thanks to Crystal for going on this crazy idea.
And thanks to you for listening. You can email us at tk331podcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter at tk331podcast. If you like this podcast, please tell a friend, tell a family member, leave us a rating and or review on Apple Podcasts or any other podcast reviewing platform of your choice.
If you're kidnapping students and trying to indoctrinate them in your ways, play this podcast for them.
And then turn yourselves in.
That too. And now, here it is, your moment of Star Wars.
I would like a Randoni yellow plague, Tanilka said without hesitation. Chilled. Make it a double. And I would like a remote terminator, Luke said. The covering membranes of the bartender's multifaceted eyes nictated twice in surprise. Not often requested. A strong drink, is it not? He seemed flustered for a moment, then made a gurgling buzz deep in his thorax that Tanilka could only interpret as a laugh. Will that be pre-programmed or randomized? Randomized, of course, Luke replied. Ah, a risk taker, Shanko said, tapping two forelegs on the bar top in approval.